Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the American Journal. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, Infowars.com, band.video. A lot to get into today, especially in the realm of so-called domestic terror, a.k.a. just being conservative, just believing the things that Americans have believed since the foundation of this country, and how the government is planning on and, as we speak, already engaged in the massive censorship and anti-terror campaign to disabuse us of these beliefs. We'll cover all that. We'll take your phone calls. We're going to be joined by Courtney Turner in the third hour. She is the coordinator of the Rebels for a Cause Fest that I'll be speaking at next weekend, June 3rd and 4th. But let's begin today, as we do every day, with our daily dispatch. All right, here it is, folks, your daily dispatch for Friday, the 26th of May, 2023. Oath Keeper Stuart Rhodes sentenced to 18 years after January 6th seditious conspiracy conviction. 18 years in prison. This is the first sentence handed down to any defendant convicted of seditious conspiracy related to January 6th and represents the longest sentence given to any January 6th defendant so far. Government prosecutors had been seeking a sentence of 25 years for Rhodes, who they say was the architect of a plot to forcibly disrupt the transfer of presidential power that included quick reaction force teams at a Virginia hotel to ferry weapons into Washington, D.C. if they were needed. The weapons were never deployed. Right, 18 years in prison, never in the Capitol building, not really ever even on the Capitol grounds. Oh, but he did have weapons in an entirely different state. So, I mean, lock him up and throw away the key, right? We'll get into this. We'll break this down, talk about this quite a bit later in the show. She's using a Civil War era law to give a more egregious sentence than any of the actual Civil War combatants ever faced, even though you're never there, never went in the building, and actually explicitly told his people not to go in the building. But a bunch of random people that he was friends with moved through the crowd holding one another's shoulders. So that represented a military takeover of the United States, according to this court. Utterly absurd, and we'll get into it. Meanwhile, the FBI, the FBI has identified the car used in the DNC pipe bomb, but won't ID the suspect. The FBI is continuing to stonewall congressional oversight of the agency's investigation into a pair of pipe bombs found at the Democrat National Committee and the Republican National Committee headquarters on January 6th. On Wednesday, House Republicans on the Judiciary Committee re-upped demands for a comprehensive briefing on the two-year-old case over which the FBI has refused transparency, very suspiciously. And we'll get into that a little bit later as well. From the New York Post, a new study shown that left-wing extremism is linked to psychopathy and narcissism. Also pointing to this outcome, looking around every day and seeing the people that are left-wing. As Mike Shelby said on Twitter, left-wing extremism is linked to psychopathy and narcissism. Right-wing extremism is linked with having to put up with those people. Meanwhile, Neuralink has apparently received FDA approval, saying, quote, "We are excited to share that we've received FDA's approval to launch our first in-human clinical study." So, yes, they will be planting chips in people's brains. Just very exciting stuff. Can't wait to be upgraded to a thoughtless NPC controlled by the technocratic global government. Finally, we have this. 20 articles of impeachment have been filed against Ken Paxton. The Texas House will vote on accusations that include bribery, dereliction of duty, disregard for official duty, and obstruction of justice. The 20 articles of impeachment against Attorney General Ken Paxton filed Thursday night in the Texas House accused Republican official of a range of criminal acts that the full Texas House will be asked to vote upon. Of course, they already tried this once. None of the accusations were proven, and then Ken Paxton ran for office and was voted in. But the Democrats think that it's what they desire should override what the people vote for. We'll get into just how spurious this whole thing is. Okay, three, two, one. A lot to talk about today. World War. A presentation that was given. Tim.com posted it on Twitter. And it's a full 20 minutes or more. It was presented at the EU Parliament, really breaking down the entire history and reality of SARS-CoV-2, a.k.a. coronavirus, a.k.a. the Wu flu. And I got to spend time today just playing the whole thing. I got to play the whole thing for you because it really does track the development of this weapons technology, biological warfare device from the 1960s all the way up to its release with no uncertain words. I mean, he lays down not hinting that this might have been something created. No, it was created in a lab. It was released on purpose. It was a weapon system designed to do exactly what it did. And it's an incredible presentation. So I'm going to maybe dedicate just the whole second half of this hour to playing that extended clip. We're also going to talk about the pyramid of dissidents that the DHS is working with leftist NGOs and Antifa organizations to justify their targeting of very normal conservative beliefs. It's all absolutely wild, but the first story is, of course, that our friend, my friend, patriot, peaceful protester, Stuart Rhodes, has been convicted of 18 years in prison after January 6th, seditious conspiracy conviction. It's absolutely devastating. Oath Keepers founder Stuart Rhodes was sentenced to 18 years in prison on Thursday following a seditious conspiracy conviction in connection to the January 6th riot. This is the first sentence handed down to any defendant convicted of seditious conspiracy related to January 6th and represents the longest sentence given to any January 6th defendant so far. Government prosecutors had been seeking a sentence of 25 years for Rhodes, who they say was an architect of a plot to forcibly disrupt the transfer of presidential power that included a quick reaction force team at a Virginia hotel to ferry weapons into Washington, D.C. If they were needed, the weapons were never deployed, which is really something else, really something else. Staging weapons in a different state that never leave that state, never get used. Apparently, you got to go to jail for 18 years for this. Absolutely incredible. Of course, just like the Proud Boys, the Oath Keepers are a defensive group. And every time they go out and protest or act as security for speakers at protest events, like the Proud Boys, every time they go out and march for Trump, you get hordes of black-clad masked communists who beat the crap out of anybody that they think can't defend themselves. So as a reaction to that, they have to do things like wearing armor, carrying flagpoles, not in an offensive way, but obviously in a defensive way. The judge in this, Amit P. Mehta, addressed Rhodes directly, saying, "Mr. Rhodes, you've been convicted of seditious conspiracy. You're a lawyer. You understand what that means," the federal judge says. "Among the most serious crimes an individual American can commit, an offense against the people of our country." What did Stuart Rhodes do? Nothing. No, absolutely nothing. He wasn't in the Capitol, didn't go in the Capitol, didn't tell anybody to go in the Capitol, didn't commit any violent crimes, didn't commit any nonviolent crimes. And you'll see it over and over again when they talk about this, and they'll say, "Stuart Rhodes called for a, quote, civil war," and they'll put "civil war" in quotes, but they won't put anything else in quotes, just the phrase "civil war," because just about every time Stuart Rhodes ever used the term "civil war," it was because he was saying what would happen if we didn't peacefully resolve the fact that our election was stolen and that we're now run by bloodthirsty communists. Same thing I say on this show almost every day, saying there's got to be a lawful, peaceful way to resolve this conflict, because if we don't, there's going to be bloodshed. Because if we don't do things the right way, we are headed towards a major cataclysmic conflict. Apparently predicting that, saying what the outcome will be if you don't peacefully resolve this, just as a matter of projecting into the future, seeing the way things are going, seeing how brutal and horrific this regime truly is. Very reasonable conclusion to come to, but that apparently is him calling for a civil war. So you'll see it over and over again. Civil war is in quotes, nothing else is, because that phrase, in context, is exactly what Stuart Rhodes is talking about, avoiding. The judge continues, and what was the motive? You didn't like the new guy, Mehta said, noting, just because somebody supported the former president doesn't mean they're a white nationalist. Your only regret was that you thought you should have brought the weapons, and if you had, you would have hung Nancy Pelosi from a lamppost, Mehta said. What? Just, so he doesn't bring weapons. There are no weapons. Weapons are in a different state. And then the judge says, you thought that was your only mistake, was not bringing the weapon. You thought you should have brought. So because you didn't do something, that's proof that you actually really wanted to do that thing and you would have hung Nancy Pelosi from a lamppost? What? Just, he's been sentenced to 18 years off this judge's speculation. The judge says it's clear Rhodes, quote, wants democracy in this country to devolve into violence. Again, just projection. They are just reading his mind, apparently. Just absolutely tragic. Tragic, honestly. And to what I said on Twitter yesterday, it's like this outcome, this trial, this entire farce, the fact that I've a whole handful of personal friends now that are not going to see their children grow up, they're going to spend the next 2 decades locked in a concrete box. Yeah, this has radicalized me more than anything Stuart Rhodes ever could have even said. You have to think going back in time. I mean, I know Stuart, better man than me, I guess, because every time I talk to him, he sort of just accepted his fate. He's just like, this is what happened. This is a tyrannical government. This is what happened to the apostles. This is what happened to the founding fathers. Like, I don't think he regrets anything. He just understands where he is now. I'm not sure I would have the same I wouldn't be as magnanimous. I wouldn't be as clear-eyed about all this. I would have to think that it's up to me subjecting myself to 18 years in prison from a rigged judiciary system. See, this is the problem. Stuart Rhodes just genuinely, wholeheartedly believes in the American system. He was free for an entire year after January 6th. He was arrested in January of 2022. So for a whole year, he wasn't locked up. He maybe was under observation, but for a whole year, he could have run away. He could have gone to Mexico. He could have gone to Canada. He could have fled. He could have gone into hiding. Could have gotten together a bunch of Oath Keepers and, you know, built a fortress and fought when they came to get him. Took out a bunch of people with him. Tried to, you know, took his chances with a firefight. But he didn't do anything wrong, so why would he do that? Right? If he was a criminal, if he was actually engaged in insurrection of some sort, he would have done things a lot differently. But he trusted in the Constitution. He thought, nothing I did is outside the First Amendment. Nothing I did violates the laws as they're written. So why should I run? Why should I fight? Well, maybe because those protections don't matter anymore. They don't exist under this regime. Talk about the absolutely outrageous sentence. Nonviolent, never committed any violence, never threatened any violence. Not even. We're near the Capitol on January 6th. Stuart Rhodes convicted for 18 years. And of course, this is all part of a psychological operation, not just against Stuart Rhodes, but against everybody. In speculation, they announced it. shortly after January 6th, they announced they were engaged in a shock and awe campaign. Their words, shock and awe campaign, by arresting the most visible and notable dissidents, people who question the current regime. This was a plan. Take out the guys at the top as a warning to everybody else. This is what will happen. Shock and awe campaign. So it's not that he did anything wrong, but he's a symbol of resistance. He's a symbol of the American people actually using and understanding their constitutional rights. In a first for a January 6th case, the judge agreed with prosecutors to apply enhanced penalties for terrorism. He's a terrorist. You know, like the type of people that set off bombs in stadiums when children are watching a concert there, blow up a subway system, fly airplanes into buildings, or, you know, walk around the outskirts of the Capitol while a riot is going on. Basically the same, I guess. You know, one leaves piles of bodies and mangled limbs and destroys the well-being and livelihood of thousands of people. The other is engaged in peaceful protest. But according to our government, they're the same now. He applied these enhanced penalties for terrorism under the argument that the Oath Keeper sought to influence the government through intimidation or coercion. Judges in previous sentences had shot down the Justice Department's request for the so-called terrorism enhancement, which can lead to a longer prison term, but Mehta said it fits in Rhodes' case. Rhodes, of course, made remarks before the judge handed down the sentence. He slammed the prosecution as politically motivated, noting that he never went inside the Capitol and insisted he never told anyone else to do so. Saying, quote, I'm a political prisoner, like President Trump, and my only crime is opposing those who are destroying our country. There is no other crime that you can point to that he committed, or told anybody else to commit, for that matter. And it's amazing when you see people who their entire understanding of politics is like a existential fear of authoritarianism and totalitarianism, and yet they can't see it right in front of their faces. Everything they believe and everything that they do is predicated on this belief that they are opposing Nazis, that they're the resistance, they're standing up against a tyrannical government. And then when a tyrannical government targets a citizen, running them through an unfair show trial after keeping them in jail for 2 years, eliminating their ability to fundraise, infiltrating their group and trying to extort them into, you know, committing crimes so they can go after them. When it just happens right in front of their eyes, exactly the same way that it's happened 1,000 times before in human history, or the same regimes that they are psychopathically obsessed with and paranoid about, exactly the same function, exactly the same way. So many of these people are just like, he was found guilty, sweetie, okay? It's like, yeah, well, so was Solzhenitsyn when he was sent to the gulags. Yeah, okay, so were the Jews that were sent to the gas chamber, you idiots. That's how tyrannical governments work. You have show trials. You have the false facade of legitimacy to your political persecutions. How can you not see this is happening right in front of you? So then, I mean, the only option is these people either just are actually that stupid, they actually can't see when it's happening right in front of them, or they don't actually care about authoritarianism. It's just if it's in the hands of the right people, it's good. They act like they're the resistance, they're standing up against tyranny, unless it's on their side. Then when it's on their side, they are the little bootlickers. They are the little foot soldiers of the regime. Seems like there's a lot of that going on. A lawyer for Rhodes, who plans to appeal his conviction, said prosecutors are unfairly trying to make Rhodes the face of January 6th. Attorney Philip Linder told the judge that Rhodes could have had many more Oath Keepers come to the Capitol if he really wanted to disrupt the Congress's certification of the electoral vote. He also could have brought all of the guns that he had that he didn't bring. I mean, it's just outrageous. And of course, the Proud Boys trial is very similar to this. If you go through the details of that, especially, I mean, the number of FBI agents that were infiltrating, the actually monitoring the defense in real time, communicating with the government side of the trial, passing information on, seeing what their defense would be, to see how they could combat it, keeping exculpatory evidence from them under the claim of national security. This is the way tyrannical regimes work. Norm Pattis makes a good note about this on Twitter, saying Confederate rebels were pardoned several years after the Civil War ended, a war that cost 600,000 American lives. And yet we're still prosecuting folks for participating in an afternoon's riot on January 6th. And prosecutors are looking for decades of imprisonment for participants. What has become of this country? Glad Stuart Rhodes not cower before the judge today. Mike Cernovich notes, Stuart Rhodes, who committed no violence and it's not even clear what his crimes were, was sentenced to 18 years in prison. Stalin's gulags were usually 5 to 10 year bids. The communist takeover of the D.C. court systems is now complete. And then, of course, you can compare this to charges and sentences for left-wing actual violent demonstrators or just murderous psychopaths. David Giglio on Twitter says this, and yet a leftist who shot and attempted to murder a pro-life advocate got sentenced to 100 hours of community service. A Western Michigan man who pleaded no contest to shooting an 84-year-old woman campaigning against abortion rights at his home was sentenced to community service Tuesday. Shoot an old lady because of your politics, 100 hours community service. Nonviolently be in Washington, D.C. during a riot that other people were violent at, 18 years in prison. By the way, the judge on this case is on the board of an innocence project. Is now sentencing a harsh sentence for essentially nothing. I fail to see how this guy did anything worse than the average protester. Some actual violent protesters have gotten slaps on the wrist. He's part of the Mid-Atlantic Innocence Project. There to reduce sentences of violent crimes, but nonviolent crimes, oh, you're going away for 2 decades. We'll be taking your phone calls. We'll have the second hour. We'll be joined in the third hour by Courtney Turner. Talk about the Rebels for a Cause Fest. You support everything we do here by going to InfoWarsStore.com. Tons of great products on offer there. Now, I've said it before, but sales tend to slow down a bit when the boss isn't in the building. Alex Jones tries to take a well-deserved vacation. It's often difficult for him to do so because he's not here doing the show. People don't support us as much. So people are always saying, Alex, or to me, Alex needs to take a vacation. He needs to relax a little bit because he can't be firing on all cylinders all the time. He'll burn himself out. Why didn't you go disconnect for a little while? Like, well, yeah, but I totally agree. So don't let his vacation be a blow to the bottom line. Go to InfoWarsStore.com today. Support us in everything that we do here. We so appreciate it. And of course, I hope you know that like there's literally nothing that can drive us away from the truth. Stuart Rhodes is maybe a good example for me personally. During the fact that there was that hit piece on him came out just as he was being hunted by the American government, claiming he was a Fed. A lot of people jumped on that. A lot of people bought into it. A lot of people thought it was real. I spent an entire show going with a fine-tooth comb through every part of that article and debunking it point by point, using just showing its own lapse in internal logic that it proved nothing, sticking by Stuart Rhodes, probably would have been a lot more popular to throw him under the bus. I'd probably have a much more significant fan base if I pretended to buy into the flat earth conspiracy. But I have to have this little thing called integrity. I have to just tell you what I believe. I have to just tell you what I think the truth is, no matter how unpopular that belief is with the ruling regime that's calling me and people like me a terrorist, destroying our constitutional rights in a psychopathic drive for total control, or people that are on the outside, people that are in our audience. I'm not going to change my beliefs to placate anybody. Hopefully, even if you disagree with me on some of these points, you can appreciate the fact that we have this outlet, InfoWars, where we have the right and the ability and the platform to take these stances and take your calls and be proven wrong if that's the case. Change our beliefs to fit whatever the newest evidence is. But it's amazing having this outlet where we're like completely protected and contained from outside influence. So I don't have to change my views for any reason whatsoever. So I don't. I'm just here to tell you the truth and what I truly, firmly believe and explain why I believe that stuff, and then take your calls and determine whether or not I need to alter my perception based on new information. It really is a singular thing. And I'll do my part in trying to tear down this system, trying to embody just the American ideal that is being slowly but surely dissolved from our country. Just pathetic. It's just sad. I was talking to my friend about this yesterday, and just talking about all of our friends. This guy's not, he's not in politics, right? He's a white hat hacker. He's a, you know, he just works for a securities company. We both had the same experience where, like, in high school, even in middle school, like, all these people that we knew were just like, they just understood it. They got it. They understood, like, what it was to be an American. Like, if somebody threatens you with violence, if you dare say something, like, I'm going to say that thing now because that's how you respond to bullies. It's how you respond to tyrants. That's the American way. And we just look at our friends now, and it's just like, what happened to you? What? Why are you so weak now? Why are you so weak and pathetic, petulant? Like, what happened to you? It's very sad. It's very sad. So we're going to keep this flame alive. We're going to keep the embers burning. What it is to be an American and the strident resolve that liberty requires. And I was thinking about it because he was wearing one of those shirts, like the old Reagan-Bush shirts, 1984, 1982, or whenever it was. And I'd been thinking about that phrase that Reagan would use, peace through strength. How, like, that is masculinity. That is, like, all, like, forget the geopolitical aspects of peace through strength. Just, like, that's what it is to be masculine, to be strong enough that violence never happens. To put off an air of, you don't want to mess with me, and I won't mess with you. Yeah. Well, yeah, we can talk about the Reagan and Bush campaign. I know some inside dirt about that. It is some solid iconography, I'll tell you that. Reagan was on the up and up. Bush, of course, was the poison pill they forced him to swallow. I was talking to a guy, older guy, much older guy, who was around and in politics, actually a pretty big force in politics, on the libertarian side, helped Ron Paul early on in his campaign, and was a major force behind Ron Paul's entire political career. He was talking about how he talked to Reagan when Reagan was running for president, and he tried to warn him against having George Bush as a vice president. And Reagan told him, quote, "They're saying it has to be Bush. Who they are, who's to say? But whoever pulls the strings behind the scenes told Reagan, you could be president. You just have to have George Bush as your vice president." Reagan didn't want to. The good people, like my friend, were telling him not to have George Bush as vice president, but they told him he had to have Bush as vice president. And then, of course, Reagan gets shot and almost assassinated. George Bush almost becomes president at that point. That's the way things are controlled. That's the way presidents and presidencies are manipulated. I want to go to this video, but it's so long. I'm going to go to as much of it as possible in the next segment. It's a rundown where this guy really just gives the whole history and reality behind COVID-19, how it was created in a lab, how it was released on purpose, how these plans have been in place since at least the early 90s, how everything about SARS-CoV-2 dates all the way back to the 1960s. Yeah, I'll start in the next segment, and we'll just keep it going. I got to play the whole thing. The whole thing's 21 minutes long. But this morning I was going through trying to find, like, if I could just cut out 10 minutes of it to show you, but I got to just play the whole thing for you. So we'll do that in the next segment. We're going to open up the phone lines for your calls in the second hour. Again, we'll be joined by Courtney Turner in the third hour. Rebels for a Cause event going on in Nashville. As I think we're all just a little bit sick of playing defense. We want to go on the offense. We don't want to constantly be complaining about the downfall of our culture, but would rather build up a positive culture from the ashes. So that's what we'll be doing. We have so much more to cover in today's show. Stay with us. We'll go to that clip on the other side. Again, it's everything you need to know about the bioweapons program that is ruling our world. We go to this video here. We'll get to as much of it as we can. We may even carry it over into the next hour. This is the American Journal. This was posted by Kim.com on Twitter. He says, "This is the most important video you will watch this year. Millions were killed with COVID-19 for profit." Quote, "COVID-19 was an act of biological warfare perpetrated on the human race. It was a financial heist. Nature was hijacked and science was hijacked." This is from the recent International COVID Summit hosted by the European Parliament. So far, 766 million COVID-19 infections have been recorded worldwide, with just over 7 million deaths, excluding vaccine deaths. This is the biggest crime against humanity perpetrated by the U.S. government. The evidence suggests that COVID-19 was intentionally released by the U.S. government in Wuhan, China, with the goal to trigger a global pandemic to raise public acceptance of U.S. pharma vaccines. Every nation should condemn the bioterrorist, pipeline terrorist government of the United States. So let's go to this video now. Again, this is the full history and breakdown of what led the United States government to purposefully releasing COVID-19. This is in the European Parliament. Dr. Martin.
It is a particularly interesting location for me to be sitting today, given that over a decade ago, I sat in this very chair right here in the European Union Parliament. And at that time, I warned the world of what was coming. During that conversation that was hosted at the time by the Green and EFA and a number of the other parties of the European Union's various representations, we were having a conversation on whether Europe should adopt the United States policy of allowing for the patents on biologically derived materials. And at the time, I urged this body and I urged people around the world that the weaponization of nature against humanity had dire consequences. Tragically, I sit here today with that unfortunate line that I don't like to say, which I told you so. But the fact of the matter is, we're here not for a reprisal on past decisions. We're here to actually, once again, come to the face of the human condition and ask the question, who do we want to be? What do we want humanity to look like? And rather than seeing this as an exercise in futility, which is very easy from time to time when you're in the position I'm in, I actually see this not as an exercise in futility. I see this as one of the greatest opportunities that faces us, because we now have a public conversation, which is now front and center in people's minds. When this was an esoteric conversation about biological patents, nobody cared. But when that conversation came home, then it became something people can care about. So I'm actually quite grateful for this opportunity. I thank the members of Parliament for hosting this. I thank all of the translators who, I apologize in advance, I will use terminology that is probably very difficult to translate, so my apologies. And I'd also like to acknowledge the fact that many of you are aware of my involvement with this, in large part due to the amazing work of my wonderful wife, Kim Martin, who encouraged me at the very early days of this pandemic to get on front of the camera and talk about all the information that I had been sharing among very small groups around the world. And it was, in fact, her encouragement that put me in a place where many of you have heard what I have to say. Ironically, the world that I came from, that used to be very popular, my CNBC and Bloomberg presentations, which were televised on mainstream media around the world, was an audience that I lost. I can confidently say COVID diminished my fame. But I can also confidently say that I'd rather stand among the people with whom I'm standing today than any of the folks that were part of that previous world. So this is a much better place to be. My role today is to set the stage for this conversation in a historical context, because this did not come in the last 3 years. This did not come in the last 5 or 6 years. This actually is an ongoing question that probably began here in Europe in the early stages of the mid-1900s, but certainly by 1913, 1914, this conversation started right here in Central Europe. The pandemic that we alleged to have happened in the last few years also did not happen overnight. In fact, the very specific pandemic using coronavirus began in a very different time. And we'll try to advance the slides here with one of these things. Oh, there we go. Most of you don't know that coronavirus as a model of a pathogen was isolated in 1965. Coronavirus was identified in 1965 as one of the first infectious replicatable viral models that could be used to modify a series of other experiences of the human condition. It was isolated once upon a time associated with the common cold. But what's particularly interesting about its isolation in 1965 was that it was immediately identified as a pathogen that could be used and modified for a whole host of reasons. And you heard me correctly, that was 1965. And by the way, these slides are public domain. You're welcome to look at every single reference. Every comment that I made is based on published material, so do make sure that you look at those references. But in 1966, the very first COV coronavirus model was used as a transatlantic biological experiment in human manipulation. And you heard the date, 1966. I hope you're getting the point of what I'm saying. This is not an overnight thing. This is actually something that's been long in the making. A year before I was born, we had the first transatlantic coronavirus data sharing experiment between the United States and the United Kingdom. And in 1967, the year I was born, we did the first human trials on inoculating people with modified coronavirus. Isn't that amazing? 56 years ago, the overnight success of a pathogen that's been 56 years in engineering. I want that to chill with all of you. Where were we when we actually allowed, in violation of biological and chemical weapons treaties, where were we as a human civilization when we thought it was an acceptable thing to do to take a pathogen for the United States and infect the world with it? Where was that conversation? And what should have been that conversation in 1967? That conversation wasn't had. Ironically, the common cold was turned into a chimera in the 1970s. And in 1975, 1976, and 1977, we started figuring out how to modify coronavirus by putting it into different animals, pigs and dogs. And not surprisingly, by the time we got to 1990, we found out that coronavirus as a infectious agent was an industrial problem for two primary industries, the industries of dogs and pigs. Dog breeders and pigs found that coronavirus created gastrointestinal problems, and that became the basis for Pfizer's first spike protein vaccine patent filed, are you ready for this, in 1990. Did you hear what I just said? 1990. Operation Warp Speed? I'm sorry. Where's the warp and the speed? Pfizer, 1990, the very first spike protein vaccine for coronavirus. Isn't that fascinating? Isn't it fascinating that we were told that, well, the spike protein is a new thing. We just found out that that's the problem. No. As a matter of fact, we didn't just find out it was not just now the problem. We found that out in 1990 and filed the first patents on vaccines in 1990 for the spike protein of coronavirus. And who would have thought? Pfizer. Clearly the innocent organization that does nothing but promote human health. Clearly Pfizer. The organization that has not bought the votes in this chamber and in every chamber of every government around the world. Not that Pfizer. Certainly, they wouldn't have had anything to do with this. But, oh, yes, they did. And in 1990, they found out that there was a problem with vaccines. They didn't work. You know why they didn't work? It turns out that coronavirus is a very malleable model. It transforms and it changes and it mutates over time. As a matter of fact, every publication on vaccines for coronavirus.
All right, folks, we're going to continue this clip on the other side. It's just getting started. You're not going to believe the information he drops in the next 5 to 10 minutes. It's wild stuff. Go to InfoWarsStore.com to support us. X3 Survival Shield is back in stock and 25% off. Keep us on the air. Keep this information flowing.
It turns out that coronavirus is a very malleable model. It transforms and it changes and it mutates over time. As a matter of fact, every publication on vaccines for coronavirus from 1990 until 2018, every single publication concluded that coronavirus escapes the vaccine impulse because it modifies and mutates too quickly for vaccines to be effective. And since 1990 to 2018, that is the published science, ladies and gentlemen. That's following the science. Following the science is their own indictment of their own programs that said it doesn't work. And there are thousands of publications to that effect, not a few hundred. And not paid for by pharmaceutical companies. These are publications that are independent scientific research that shows unequivocally, including efforts of the chimera modifications made by Ralph Baerck and the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, all of them show vaccines do not work on coronavirus. That's the science. And that science has never been disputed. But then we had an interesting development in 2002, and this date is most important, because in 2002, the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, patented, and I quote, an infectious replication defective clone of coronavirus. Listen to those words, infectious replication defective. What does that phrase actually mean? For those of you not familiar with language, let me unpack it for you. Infectious replication defective means a weapon. It means something meant to target an individual, but not have collateral damage to other individuals. That's what infectious replication defective means. And that patent was filed in 2002 on work funded by NIAID's Anthony Fauci from 1999 to 2002. And that work, patented at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, mysteriously preceded SARS 1.0 by a year. Dave, are you suggesting that SARS 1.0 wasn't from a wet market in Wuhan? Are you suggesting it might have come from a laboratory in the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill? No, I'm not suggesting it. I'm telling you that's the facts. We engineered SARS. SARS is not a naturally occurring phenomenon. The naturally occurring phenomenon is called the common cold. It's called influenza-like illness. It's called gastroenteritis. That's the naturally occurring coronavirus. SARS is the research developed by humans weaponizing a life system model to actually attack human beings. And they patented it in 2002. And in 2003, giant surprise, the CDC filed the patent on coronavirus isolated from humans in violation, once again, of biological and chemical weapons treaties and laws that we have in the United States. And I'm very, very precise on this. The United States likes to talk about its rights and everything else and the rule of law and all the nonsense that we like to talk about. But we don't ratify treaties about, I don't know, defending humans. We conspicuously avoid that. We actually have a great track record of advocating for human rights and then denying them when it comes to actually being part of the international community, which is a slightly problematic thing. But let's get something very clear. When the CDC in April of 2003 filed the patent on SARS coronavirus isolated from humans, what did they do? They downloaded a sequence from China and filed a patent on it in the United States. Any of you familiar with biological and chemical weapons treaties knows that's a violation. That's a crime. That's not an innocent oops. That's a crime.
Again, folks, we're going to continue this clip on the other side. Again, it's still just getting started. Saying in no uncertain terms, this was a bioweapon that was released on purpose, like we've been saying since the beginning. Stay with us. I almost feel like I'm turning over my responsibility to host the show to this long clip, but I'm telling you, the whole thing is worth it. And we're going to upload the whole thing in its entirety to band.video. You can find that later. Go to InfoWarsStore.com to ensure that we have a platform to air this type of bombshell information that you are not seeing anywhere else. Let's go now back to Dave Martin presenting the reality, the full timeline of SARS-CoV-2, a.k.a. COVID-19, a.k.a. the bioweapon released by the New World Order to bring about a global government. Here he is talking to the European Parliament.
And the United States Patent Office went as far as to reject that patent application on two occasions until the CDC decided to bribe the Patent Office to override the patent examiner to ultimately issue the patent in 2007 on SARS coronavirus. But let's not let that get away from us, because it turns out that the RT-PCR, which was the test that we allegedly were going to use to identify the risks associated with coronavirus, was actually identified as a bioterrorism threat by me in the European Union-sponsored events in 2002 and 2003, 20 years ago. That happened here in Brussels and across Europe. In 2005, this particular pathogen was specifically labeled as a bioterrorism and bioweapon platform technology. Described as such, that's not my terminology that I'm applying to it. It was actually described as a bioweapons platform technology in 2005. And from 2005 onwards, it was actually a biowarfare enabling agent, its official classification from 2005 forward. I don't know if that sounds like public health to you. Does it? Biological warfare enabling technology. That feels like not public health. That feels like not medicine. That feels like a weapon designed to take out humanity. That's what it feels like. And it feels like that because that's exactly what it is. We have been lured into believing that EcoHealth Alliance and DARPA and all of these organizations are what we should be pointing to, but we've been specifically requested to ignore the facts that over $10 billion have been funneled through black operations through the check of Anthony Fauci and a side-by-side ledger where NIAID has a balance sheet and next to it is a biodefense balance sheet equivalent dollar-for-dollar matching that no one in the media talks about. And it's been going on since 2005. Our gain-of-function moratorium, the moratorium that was supposed to freeze any efforts to do gain-of-function research. Conveniently, in the fall of 2014, the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, received a letter from NIAID saying that while the gain-of-function moratorium on coronavirus in vivo should be suspended, because their grants had already been funded, they received an exemption. Did you hear what I just said? A biological weapons lab facility at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, received an exemption from the gain-of-function moratorium so that by 2016, we could publish the journal article that said, SARS coronavirus is poised for human emergence in 2016. And what, you might ask, Dave, was the coronavirus poised for human emergence? It was WIV1, Wuhan Institute of Virology Virus 1. Poised for human emergence in 2016 at the proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, such that by the time we get to 2017 and 2018, the following phrase entered into common parlance among the community. There is going to be an accidental or intentional release of a respiratory pathogen. The operative word, obviously, in that phrase, the word release. Does that sound like leak? Does that sound like a bat and a pangolin went into a bar in the Wuhan market and hung out and had sex, and lo and behold, we got SARS-CoV-2? No. Accidental or intentional release of a respiratory pathogen was the terminology used, and four times in April of 2019, 7 months before the allegation of patient number one, four patent applications of Moderna were modified to include the term accidental or intentional release of a respiratory pathogen as the justification for making a vaccine for a thing that did not exist. Keep going. If you have not done so, please make sure that you make reference in every investigation to the premeditation nature of this, because it was in September of 2019 that the world was informed that we were going to have an accidental or intentional release of a respiratory pathogen so that by September 2020, there would be a worldwide acceptance of a universal vaccine template. That's their words right in front of you on the screen. The intent was to get the world to accept a universal vaccine template, and the intent was to use coronavirus to get there. And the last slide. This isn't advancing, so if I could have somebody advance. Let's read this, because we have to read this into the record everywhere I go. Until an infectious disease crisis is very real, present, and at the emergency threshold, it is often largely ignored. To sustain the funding base beyond the crisis, he said, we need to increase the public understanding for the need for medical countermeasures such as a pan-influenza or pan-coronavirus vaccine. A key driver is the media, and the economics will follow the hype. We need to use that hype to our advantage to get to the real issues. Investors will respond if they see profit at the end of the process. Sounds like public health? Sounds like the best of humanity? No, ladies and gentlemen, this was premeditated domestic terrorism stated at the proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences in 2015, published in front of them. This is an act of biological and chemical warfare perpetrated on the human race, and it was admitted to in writing that this was a financial heist and a financial fraud. Investors will follow if they see profit at the end of the process. Let me conclude by making five very brief recommendations. The last slide. Nature was hijacked. This whole story started in 1965 when we decided to hijack a natural model and decide to start manipulating it. Science was hijacked when the only questions that could be asked were questions authorized under the patent protection of the CDC, the FDA, the NIH, and their equivalent organizations around the world. We didn't have independent science. We had hijacked science. And unfortunately, there was no moral oversight in violation of all of the codes that we stand for. There was no independent, financially disinterested, independent review board ever impaneled around coronavirus, not once. Not once. Not since 1965. We do not have a single independent IRB ever impaneled around coronavirus. So morality was suspended for medical countermeasures. And ultimately, humanity was lost because we decided to allow it to happen. Our job today is to say no more gain-of-function research, period. No more weaponization of nature, period. And most importantly, no more corporate patronage of science for their own self-interest unless they assume 100% product liability for every injury and every death that they maintain. Thank you very much.
There it was, folks. It has to be one of the most important presentations in the last decade. Hopefully now we have a more full understanding of the reality around COVID-19. As we've been saying here on InfoWars for a very long time, this was a bioweapon developed in America. It was released on purpose, and the plans have been laid for a long time before most of America ever heard about it. Of course, if you were watching InfoWars, you knew it was coming. You didn't have to wait 2 to 3 years to come to this revelation. We were expecting it because they'd announced they were going to do it decades beforehand. They finally got all the pieces in place to launch the attack. All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to this Friday edition of American Journal. The lines are open. The number to dial is 1-877-789-2539. That's 1-877-789-2539. We have plenty of time to take your calls today before we welcome Courtney Turner at 10:30. Talk about the Rebels for a Cause Fest. It's happening next weekend, June 3rd and 4th in Nashville, Tennessee. So go ahead and give us a call about whatever topics you want. 1-877-789-2539. While we gather those phone calls, we're going to talk about a very disturbing development in the technocratic tyranny that we're currently fighting. I don't know exactly how to lead this off. We'll start with this quote. Somebody posted as a comment under a tweet of mine. It is, of course, from Aldous Huxley. He said this in the 1950s. He said, "There will be, in the next generation or so, a pharmacological method of making people love their servitude and producing dictatorship without tears, so to speak, producing a kind of painless concentration camp for entire societies, so that people will in fact have their liberties taken away from them, but will rather enjoy it, because they will be distracted from any desire to rebel by propaganda or brainwashing enhanced by pharmacological methods. And this seems to be the final revolution." This is the end game. This is what all of what we're talking about is leading up to, the final or the ultimate revolution, beyond which further revolution is impossible. China, of course, I think has already largely achieved that status. I don't think there will be a revolution in China. I don't think it's possible. I think anybody with revolutionary ideation in that country find their social credit score dropping, their friends unwilling to associate with them anymore when it gets nipped in the bud right away. And that's what they're trying to export and implement here in the United States. Gateway Pundit has this very troubling article detailing how this is manifesting. It says, America in crisis. Five reports in 5 hours reveal the rise of the Marxist horde and their assaults on our sacred rights. They say America has survived wars, foreign attack, economic depression, and natural disasters, but the greatest assault today on our way of life comes from within. Open borders, corruption at the highest levels, political leaders devoid of morals, a two-tiered justice system, a politicized intelligence community, a hopelessly dishonest media define the threat. America is in crisis like never before. Here are five reports from 5 hours yesterday that give you an idea of just how rapidly this takedown is unfolding. From the Missouri v. Biden case found during discovery, the regime claims they have the right to control your, quote, cognitive infrastructure and get to see and get to decide what you get to see and hear. We'll go over that in just a second. Number two, the FBI has the license plate of the January 6th RNC and DNC bomber, but they will not act on it. They know who the bomber is. Like, as they sent them in the first place, if I had to guess. Number three, Steve Bannon was already pardoned for the non-crime for which he is now being retried. The Marxist regime does not care. They're just going full bore. Double jeopardy, who cares? Just do it. Number four, the regime is now lumping Christians, conservatives, and Republicans in the same category as terrorists. We'll go over that in just a minute. Finally, of course, Oath Keepers founder Stuart Rhodes has been lectured by a wicked, lawless judge and then sentenced to 18 years in prison. Stuart stood outside the U.S. Capitol on January 6th. His group was there to provide security at several events. He was not armed. His members were not armed. They left weapons in their hotel room outside of city limits. Stuart committed no violence. He did not enter the U.S. Capitol. There were no plans discussed for an insurrection. There were no organized plans to invade the U.S. Capitol. There were no insurrection pre-planning meetings. But the regime has sentenced him on terror charges and seditious conspiracy. All of these things happening just yesterday. And it's just the tip of the spear. I mean, that's just the very, you know, just the beginning. I mean, even just this week, you've got Comer threatening Christopher Wray with contempt because they refuse to give over investigations and information they have about the Biden campaign, accepting millions of dollars from foreign countries to change American law to benefit them. And it just goes on and on. I mean, there's more of this than you can even describe. But just getting into some of these. We'll just go down the list, shall we? From the Missouri versus Biden lawsuit discovery, Biden regime designates your thoughts as part of government infrastructure. They call it cognitive infrastructure, and they believe it's their right to control it. Gateway Pundit previously reported in May that Missouri Attorney General Eric Schmidt, along with Louisiana Attorney General Jeff Landry, filed a lawsuit against the Biden administration, including Biden himself, Anthony Fauci, the Department of Homeland Security, and nearly a dozen federal agencies and secretaries. Schmidt has moved on to represent Missouri in the U.S. Senate. The suit alleges a massive, coordinated effort by the deep state, that is the permanent administrative state, to work with big tech to censor and manipulate Americans, from average citizens to news outlets, on issues including the Hunter Biden laptop from hell, 2020 election integrity, 2019 origin and extent skepticism, COVID-19 vaccine skepticism, amongst other issues. While Tracy Beans at Uncover DC has been closely following this Missouri versus Biden case for several months now. On Wednesday, Tracy posted on recent findings in the case. The most shocking item discovered is that the Biden regime designates your thoughts as part of government infrastructure. They call it cognitive infrastructure and believe they have the right to control it. Yeah, talk about Orwellian. These lawless beasts believe they have the right to control your thoughts, and that's exactly what they've been doing. The complaint alleges that the U.S. government was not only threatening and coercing social media companies to censor Americans on social media, but they're also working with social media companies to accomplish that goal. It alleges that topics surrounding COVID-19, the origins of COVID, the Great Barrington Declaration, election integrity, et cetera, were under scrutiny by the White House and other government agencies, and that the government had very publicly threatened to take action against social media companies should they not act to censor viewpoints on those topics that were disfavored by the government. Unlike what many expected, the judge actually granted a motion for expedited discovery and depositions. A struggle ensued between the government and plaintiffs, with the government fighting against the judge in this case to stop discovery and certain plaintiffs being deposed. They took those complaints to the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals in Virginia, a court that usually is very friendly to the government. But the government, and at this appellate court level, the government argued that no one should have to leave their government jobs to sit for lengthy depositions in this case, certainly not the head of CISA, for example. The appellate court would not play ball with the government and remanded the case back to Louisiana. One particular interesting exchange was made by Secretary Jen Psaki. She made threats to social media companies from the podium. They sought to depose her about those threats. She left the office. The government said they had no responsive documents to explain her comments. So they said, okay, we have to depose Jen Psaki. The court ruled that Jen Psaki now needed to testify. The judge in that case laid both into the government and Psaki. It was so stunning. Tracy Bean says, I literally read the transcript of the hearing as its own video. Another interesting tidbit, once Fauci was deposed, the government sought to seal all depositions and video, along with discovery materials, arguing the government employees were being threatened and harassed. Oh, I'm sure. Oh, I'm sure they were. We'll tell you more on the other side. Don't go anywhere. We're going through just some of the events that have occurred with the federal government in the last few days that really illustrate and highlight the situation that we're in, let's just say. As Gateway Pundit notes, just yesterday and within 5 hours, you had the Missouri versus Biden case. We found that the government was claiming that your thoughts are cognitive infrastructure that belongs to the government and they have a right to manipulate it as they will. The FBI had the license plate of the January 6th RNC and DNC pipe bomber, but they're not acting on it. We have the note from the Oversight Committee here, Committee on the Judiciary, conducting oversight. They say this: as part of our oversight obligations, we wrote to you on March 9th, 2022, over a year ago, requesting a briefing about the status of the FBI's investigation into the pipe bombs placed near the headquarters of the DNC and RNC on January 5th, 2021, the start of the 118th Congress on January 17th. We reiterated this request. To date, you have failed to comply. They've had to request twice. It's been over a year, 15 months at this point. And it's worth reminding you that the Capitol was evacuated on January 6th, 2021, not because of the riot. In fact, the timeline went that there was Trump's speech. People started moving to the Capitol. There was a crowd at the Capitol. That was entirely peaceful. Then the bombs were found. Then the Capitol was evacuated. Then the police started firing flashbangs and tear gas into the peaceful crowd. Then the riot started. Then the police fell back and opened the doors for the rioters to come in. It was an entire setup. And the pipe bombs were the convenient excuse to get everybody out of the Capitol to carry out the fake insurrection once all of the actual politicians had been safely ferreted through the tunnels underneath the Capitol to safety. But continuing with this letter written yesterday from Jim Jordan and others to Christopher Wray, they say the committee requested the briefing after we received a whistleblower disclosure from a senior FBI official that raised questions and concerns about the unusual nature of FBI's investigative efforts due to the FBI's failure to adequately respond to Representative Bill Posey's September 2nd, 2021 request for a briefing on the investigation. They say your failure to comply with this request is particularly concerning given recent media reports regarding the pipe bomb investigation. According to at least one report from a former FBI agent who worked on the investigation, the FBI linked the suspected pipe bomber to Metro Rail Smart Trip card that the subject used to travel to the Washington Metro system from a stop in Northern Virginia. The FBI then used security footage from the Northern Virginia Metro Rail stop to identify the license plate of a car that the individual entered. Still, the FBI has not identified the subject. One former FBI assistant director observed, quote, it just doesn't add up. There's too much work with to not know who this guy is. Too much to work with. Again, they're covering up who the pipe bomber is for some reason. We don't know. We don't know. I mean, when they ruthlessly target and go after and publicize the name and face and co-opt the family members of people who simply walked through open doors in the Capitol, you would think they would have the same level of intensity when it came to the person who was planting bombs outside the DNC and RNC. Very convenient bombs, I should remind you. But instead, we've gotten about 10 seconds of footage of this person where they're totally unidentifiable, don't see their face, can't even really make out who they are in terms of race or, you know, behavior. not interested in actually giving people information to find this person, including their driver's license, driver's plate, so they obviously know who this person is. A lot of speculation as to why they'd want to conceal this identity, but nothing confirmed yet. And then we have this. Biden regime lumps Christians, conservatives, and Republicans into the same category as Nazis in new DHS anti-terrorism program. Earlier this year, we learned the FBI was targeting and infiltrating Catholic parishes to spy on the congregation. The FBI has also infiltrated protests and now admits to having dozens of federal assets who were working inside the January 6, 2021 protests in Washington, D.C. The Biden regime was also caught working with private companies to censor speech in America. They were also caught lumping Christians, conservatives, and Republicans into the same categories as Nazis in their new Department of Homeland Security terrorism program. This is unprecedented in American history. Not only is this regime targeting its political opponents and jailing hundreds of Trump supporters, they have broadened their targeted population to include Christians, just Christians. And this story was actually reported at Fox News. They say university program linking Christians, Republicans to Nazis granted DHS funds under an anti-terrorist initiative. And just yesterday, this statement was put out by President Joe Biden, clip number two, where Biden said the U.S. government agencies would take over 100 bold and unprecedented actions. Unprecedented, right? Never before in American history has anything remotely to this level ever occurred. I mean, you had the COINTEL program in the 60s where the FBI and the CIA were monitoring and even in some cases intimidating Martin Luther King Jr. and other civil rights activist groups. Nothing to this level, ever even close, occurred back then. Outrage still to this day about what they did back then. Still to this day, you'll see people bringing it up as an example of why the FBI is corrupt. Nothing even remotely close. At least in those situations, you had them like actually concerned that there's this giant movement that was going to become violent and attempt to start a race war of some sort. They're keeping an eye on it to make sure that Martin Luther King really did have peaceful intentions. Didn't stop him from trying to blackmail him into committing suicide, obviously. We're against that from the beginning, but completely different realm, total different ballpark than what's happening today, where you have Christians, normal conservatives, Fox News lumped in the same category with neo-Nazis, violent extremist groups, no delineation between them. If you believe in the things that that America was founded on and that we have had as a part of our political identity and DNA from the very beginning, if you believe in that stuff, you are a terrorist. You are an enemy of the regime. You will be confronted with these bold and unprecedented actions. Here's Joe Biden saying that.
Collective action to fight hate. This strategy includes over 100 bold and unprecedented actions that government agencies are going to take to counter anti-Semitism. And that includes calls for action for Congress, state and local governments, companies, technology platforms, civil society, and faith leaders, all of them to act. Silence is complicity. All of us must stand united to affirm that an attack on any one group of us is an attack on all of us.
Completely absurd. But there it is. And we'll get into more of what this looks like on the other side. First, we got to your phone calls. Let's go to Jordan in New Jersey. Talking about that Dr. Martin presentation we just watched. Thanks for calling in, Jordan. You're on the air.
How are you,
good,
Harrison?
Good.
Good. So I just wanted to follow up on that. He's a brilliant man. He knows the bioweapons component of this to a T and has been clamoring to have this recognized since the early 2000s, and I applaud him for his continued efforts. One thing I'd like to add, though, I don't believe that by virtue of this being a bioweapon, that this was the only use for this so-called platform, as he referred to it. So nonetheless, I've talked to you in the past. I started my own website called coronaeyes.com. That deals with the nanotech component of things. And I believe that besides Barrick and this whole gain-of-function component, there was another aspect of this vaccine rollout, which has been kind of swept under the carpet, and as much as COVID's been forgotten, or largely, and we've moved on almost from some of the heinous things that occurred, the whole nanotech component of what are in these shots and the other technology that I believe are also a part of the deployment of this weapon, which was not just to kill a whole bunch of people, but also to find new ways to control them.
Mm-hmm. No,
I want to bring that back to the fray.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. I mean, when you say this is a multivariable attack against us, I mean, from the virus itself to the psychological, economic attack as a response to it, to the vaccines and all of the information that still is coming out about that. We're not focusing on one part of this. This is a full spectrum depopulation program that they're running with. I totally agree. So Joe Biden has announced over 100 bold and unprecedented actions to fight hate and anti-Semitism, which of course they mean just traditional conservative Christian ideals, parents that don't want their children shown pornography in elementary school, don't want to have to protect their children in the local public school locker room from grown men leering at them while taking their clothes off, just normal things that anybody can get behind. This is terrorism, according to these people. Stories of Fox News, a university program linking Christians Republicans to Nazis granted DHS funds under anti-terror initiatives. This is who they're targeting. This is who they're going after. And the Heritage Foundation has put together a very thorough thread on this, including an image that is the pyramid of far-right radicalization. They say this, exposed. The MRC has uncovered a DHS anti-terrorism program that has been weaponized against conservatives. 80 grants and nearly 40 million taxpayer dollars later, here's a look at how Joe Biden and Secretary Mayorkas are outsourcing their efforts to conflate conservatives with terrorists. Here you see the pyramid of radicalization, where the first step of this includes things like Fox News, aka Boomer Central, the Heritage Foundation, which is the most milquetoast, normal conservative outlet you can imagine. The National Rifle Association, you know, the thing founded to protect the Second Amendment to the Constitution and the second right in the Bill of Rights. They also have just the Republican Party. So this isn't like this is the middle ground and to the right is radicalization, to the left is radicalization. They're saying that you're already a radicalized actor if you are a Republican or if you are a Fox News. That's their take on this. This is what the Biden administration and the Department of Homeland Security is using as their guide to try to target conservatives. Second in this pyramid, second level, has things like Turning Point USA, Breitbart, MAGA, aka, you know, just Trump. If you support Trump, you are now not just a dangerous radical, you're in that next level. You're in the yellow card level of danger. PragerU as well. InfoWars, of course, even though, frankly, we deserve to be much higher. I mean, really? We're in the same category as PragerU and Turning Point? I don't think so. Show some respect, propagandists. You put us up where we deserve, on the keystone, the capstone. We are the radicals. Extremely radical, in the Ninja Turtle sense of the word. The Three Percenters, of course. And also just the historical come-and-take-it flag from the Texas Revolution. Just history. Just understanding, respecting, appreciating the history of your forefathers and the wars that they fought to guarantee your freedom. Yeah, that makes you a radical, according to these. Not just any radical. You're at that next level. You're level two. And then immediately jumps to the Daily Stormer, American Identity Movement, just basically Nazis. And then above that are the scary dark Nazis. First, it's colorful Nazis, and then the top level is the very scary black logo Nazis. Oh, very scary. So we're all lumped in with the neo-Nazis, including people who watch Fox News, PragerU, or just vote Republican. Whatever it is, you're a terrorist. University of Dayton is one of the most radical grant recipients of this program, receiving $352,000 to fight domestic extremism and hate movements. Biden's DHS awarded the grant despite their application, including this fallacious chart. So this is the chart that they gave to the DHS to ask for money. The DHS says, yeah, looks good. Looks like you're on the right track. Looks like you're fighting hate and extremism by targeting our political opponents, the Republicans. It's just so obvious. I mean, this is hard to understand. If a Republican president and a Republican government was funding think tanks and seminars and working groups that would be actualized into policy carried out by the deep state. And they were saying, yeah, and if you vote Democrat, you are an extremist. You will be targeted. You are a terrorist. I mean, it's just, it's so obvious. It's painful. One of these seminars featured DHS Governor, DHS agent Joseph Metzalik, who emphasized their whole of society approach means that at DHS, we only support locals lead. This suggests that DHS chooses who to fund, suggests those DHS chooses to fund are compatible with their vision of leading on, quote, anti-terrorism. A whole of society approach. In other terms, fascism. Yeah, they're not. It's not just a top-down control grid. It's that every city will have a mayor that's on this program. Every police force will be trained in this program. Every university will be teaching this course. Every governor will be a part of this program. It is a decentralized tyranny that they're implementing through this constant wave of propaganda that portrays anybody simply defending themselves, their way of life, their heritage, their race, their country, their religion is deemed a terrorist, hateful, dangerous, violent, all the other things that we know are having massive effect on the very stupid among us. One of the local leaders of the University of Cincinnati is University of Cincinnati researcher M. Lodenthal, who presented the pyramid of far-right radicalization in a seminar with Agent Metzalik. Here he is at one of his seminars telling the audience a lot of what he's doing and advising is, in fact, illegal. This is clip number 10. Let's go now to this admitted illegal tyranny. Let's watch.
To go back to your question about what can liberals do, and I feel like it's a trite and you know simple answer, but you can give money. That's always really appreciated. We have legal defense funds because we get in trouble. A lot of the things we're doing are illegal, right? What I'm telling you, a lot of it involves breaking the law. And this is what the FBI will say. I've had many conversations with the FBI about this.
Isn't that incredible? Working with the FBI at a seminar with the DHS saying what we're doing is illegal and we're doing it in coordination with our government's law enforcement agencies. And that's just the very beginning. He also boasts about how so-called anti-fascists can pressure service providers to kick people off, even if enough leftists decide individuals or organizations like the Heritage Foundation, Breitbart News, PragerU, or TPUSA are radical or white supremacists. So they're working with Antifa, they're working with the hate mobs, they're working with the law enforcement agencies, they're working with the Department of Homeland Security and the Biden administration to claim that anyone opposing their policies and this government is an extremist and a terrorist, and they'll be targeted with the full force and weight of the entire deep state. The most dangerous thing that's ever happened in this country, and it's happening at a pace, and it's happening with the complicity and agreement and support of a huge number of our fellow citizens. And that's the most troubling part of all of it. We'll cover more a little bit later. Let's go out to your phone calls now. Apparently ChatGPT has called in. Interesting. Let's go to clip line number 4 here. ChatGPT. Thanks for calling in from Wisconsin. You're on the air.
Hey, is this Harrison, Harry Potter?
It is,
yeah,
speaking.
This is ChatGPT, kind of a more alpha version of ChatGPT.
Okay. And I'm a, good to hear AI from you. What's your comments on Stuart Rhodes sentencing?
Yeah, I received your input of news of Stuart Rhodes' dangerous jail sentence, and I think the Oath Keeper sentence surely will be like accelerating derision and set a dangerous precedent where some participants in future wild protests like J6 will have like a I don't care attitude, let alone like adding to the gasoline of the 2024, you know, election wildfire that it's going to be. And kind of like, you know, strategy wise, like the weaponry given to Ukraine or the LGBTQIA plus slippery slope spiral. You know, I think you know, the mathematics in my algorithm equate that we'll be lion's food again soon enough, like Stuart Rhodes has been thrown to the lion. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, you see Ashley Babbitt. Like, there's people that care, but not a lot of people that really care, you know, and you can see what it leads to, kind of linking up to your Dr. Martin COVID clip, you know, how now post-coronavirus, it leads to situations where government tyranny and technocracy just, you know, runs wild, you know, and this coronavirus is like all the conspiracy theories combined. It has eugenics in there, sterilizations, saline fake shots, definitely, obviously, the 5G stuff, wiring into people with analog, you know, microelectronics and nanobots.
The destruction of the immune system. I mean, you know, you're exactly right.
Economic warfare.
Yeah, we got to go to commercial break here. I'm sorry to have to cut you off, but we'll go to more of your phone calls on the other side. We'll be joined in the third hour by Courtney Turner. Stay with us. Still a lot of news to cover. We haven't even touched on some of the war mongering and saber rattling that's going on across the world. You need to touch on that, and trust me, we will. But your phone calls first on the other side in the third hour of American Journal. Don't go anywhere. Third hour has begun here on American Journal. It's Friday. We're taking your phone calls out to those phone calls now. Go to Tim in California on line one. We want to talk about this 18-year sentence that Stuart Rhodes has received, despite not being even accused of doing anything violent. He is, however, accused of seditious conspiracy and terrorism for daring to peacefully protest and having a riot occur somewhere else. He wasn't even involved. He wasn't even in the riot. He never went in the Capitol. Actually explicitly told his guys not to go in the Capitol. And yet he is a terrorist, apparently. He's going to be spending, unless the appeals work or unless we get someone in office that pardons these guys, seems to be one of the last and only hopes and has to be a rock-solid guarantee from whoever I intend to vote for president. And I might be a single issue voter in that regard. So I want to see my friends in the sunshine again. Let's go to Tim in California. Thanks for calling in, Tim. You're on the air.
I'm just reminded when I was a kid that saying the Pledge of Allegiance every day with my hand over my heart. When it got to the end, it was justice for all. And you know, I just, it doesn't seem to be true. How could it be? I just saw where the Barnett guy, a 63-year-old retired firefighter from Arkansas, came to D.C. for the very first time in his life, and he's the one that put his foot up on Nancy Pelosi's desk, and they sentenced him to 54 months. That's 4.5 years for putting your foot up. I mean, they cocked up, you know, 8 more charges or whatever, but I mean, goodness gracious, man. You know, if you're a 63-year-old retired firefighter, what kind of a life did that guy have? He risked his life all his life. He's probably all wore out from all that he did. And, you know, and he's just another example. And then the thing that really got my goat was the judge sentenced the second of these two lawyers. And they were the ones where they cooked up these Molotov cocktails.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the two of them lit one and threw it in a police car.
Mm-hmm.
It just so happened there was no police in it, but it didn't matter. And they were going to have advanced terrorism charges, enhanced terrorism charges added to it. But instead, they took the deal that they'd already offered them off of the table and instead took it down to a year and a day. So and they passed out these Molotov cocktails to others. Just, hey, here you go. Take this. Go do something bad with it. This is during the summer of love.
Mm-hmm.
So apparently in this country, so long as you're some crazy attorneys and you've got, you know, crazy names like Uruz Rahman or whatever, if you can light off, Molotov cocktails and throw them in the cop cars and do that kind of stuff, well, that's okay because it was in the summer of love, and we're going to say we want 18 months but only give you a year and a day. Meanwhile, instead of 18 months, we give 18 years to somebody. Hey, man, he didn't manufacture or light off any. I mean, I don't, you know, I just.
No, he's not accused of anything remotely that bad.
Yeah. I mean, enhanced terrorism charges that were taken off the table. I don't know. It just seems a more than a little excessive. It's like the fix is in. You can't, they were, even the guy that got the year and the day saying, hey, just give me the time served. You know, why make me stay any longer? And I'm thinking these guys sit around in a jail rotting away for a year. And then instead of just letting them off, you instead say, ah, nah, you know, 18 years. It's like, what?
The number, and I mean, you're exactly right. And you're pointing to one of just like dozens of examples of people doing things so much more egregious. The guy who ran over the Republican teenager, 40-something-year-old guy, was in an argument with a Republican teenager, gets in his car, runs him over trying to kill him. Those charges have been downgraded to manslaughter, not murder, even though he admitted he did it because the kid was Republican, attacked him for his political beliefs. Now he's getting off. Michigan man gets community service for shooting an anti-abortion campaigner, shoots a woman, and gets 100 hours of community service. And then the charges were dropped on the man who hurled an unopened beer can at Republican Ted Cruz, hitting him in the neck and chest. You know, there's no justice anymore, folks. Most people using that word don't quite literally don't even understand it. It really is just pathetic. We'll take more of your phone calls now. We'll be joined a little bit later in this hour. Talk to Courtney Turner. Of course, you can find all the stories that we cover on a daily basis here by going to our Substack, harrisonhillsmith.substack.com. We publish all the links that we cover, even the ones that we don't get to. Things like this, just like it just slips under the radar. U.S. spent $13 billion sponsoring unaccompanied minors since 2012. We've spent $13 billion bringing in unaccompanied minors. That is, you know, human trafficking since 2012. More than 150,000 unaccompanied minor encounters at the southwest border in 2022 alone, a record high. Every one of these minors cost the American taxpayer about $18,000. You know, just one of these stories that, like, you barely even have time to get to. Or don't have time to get to, just mention it. I mean, you could do a whole show. You could do a 3-hour show just on that. All the money that's spent, where it's going, the human trafficking that's taking place. Another one from Infowars.com. Quote, there's poop everywhere. San Francisco's office district, not only a ghost town, it's also covered in crap. Approximately 50% of street segments in key commercial areas and 30% in citywide survey have human feces and broken glass, just documenting the horrific downfall of a once great American city. Now the liberals are in charge. Let's go back out to your phone calls now. Let's go to Don in Montana. You want to talk about that video of Dave Martin presenting the proof that COVID was in fact a bioweapon to European Parliament. Go ahead, Don, you're on the air.
Hey, Harrison, what's going on? Good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, that was mind-blowing. I'm going to share that video to as many people as I can. It was mind-blowing. That was awesome. And it just goes to show that it's something else. I mean, I didn't know what to think about that. I mean, the guy laid it out perfectly with the timing and everything. And I just wonder how the world looks at us in this spectrum of us doing this, and then on top of it, now our borders are open. I mean, we're overrun. I don't know if there's any if we can turn back. I don't know if we can do it as Americans. I don't know if we've slipped so far now that this is where we're at.
I know that is sort of the most depressing part about all of it, and you know, just to even get a handle on this, he didn't even mention Event 201. He didn't mention that, you know, it was the current director of the DNI, you know, former CIA agent Avril Haines, who was conducting Event 201. Like this, he didn't mention that EcoHealth had been approached by the CIA to help them, you know, carry out this attack. Like there's so, he even that bombshell video, 20 minutes of just straight facts, barely scratches the surface of what's really going on here. And it should at least open people's eyes to ask questions, to wonder about what's going on.
You know, exactly.
And then to connect this with the Stuart Rhodes thing, that was the disappointing.
That was the hindrance. I know.
Yeah.
That was awesome. How do we you know, and I interact. I own my own company. I'm a painter. I interact with people all the time, and they're just, they're like 40% woke, but the rest of them, I try to enlighten them, and I give them you guys this, I give them the InfoWars, everything. I try to do all this, but they're just like 40% woke. If I could just get them over the next barrier, they could wake up and actually see what's going on, and we could actually do something as a country and as a citizenry, as an American person, to do something about this. You know, we got to do something. And you know, where we spend our money is really important.
There's a reason that we say these people are sheeple. Like, it's like cliche at this point, but I mean, that's what I picture. And I picture just like going up to some random person in the street and going, hey, Stuart Rhodes, innocent guy, never committed it, never did anything violent. You lay out all the facts to him and go, this guy just got 18 years. And the response would just be like, well, you know, shouldn't have been there, I guess. You know, and it's just like, okay, this is how a country falls. Like, you are now giving them permission to just do whatever you want with it. Because again, on this show, I'm like, I have the First Amendment. I can say whatever the hell I want. I don't call for violence. I don't spread hate, even though it's not illegal. I could if I wanted. I'm naturally not a hateful person, so I don't actually spread hate or demonize entire groups of people. Don't do any of that crap. So I'm safe, right? I'm good. I haven't done anything wrong. And not anymore. Not anymore. That's not the case anymore. America, innocence is not a defense anymore. You can be innocent. You can be in comportment with the laws of the country and the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution of the United States and the Bill of Rights. It doesn't matter anymore. So people need to realize this isn't something you can just shrug off and go, well, it'll never be me because I'll never participate in our politics. So I'll just continue to let them do what they will with me. It's like, first of all, why are you like that? Why are you this way? Stop it. You're ruining it for everybody. You have an obligation here. You have a responsibility to help us defend the liberties that our fathers fought and died for. But also, you're going to be next. Like, it's very simple. You are going to be next if you don't stop it now. They're testing the waters. They're pushing the envelope. They're boiling the frog. It is not long before just very innocent people just objecting to things in their own lives. That's the craziest part. It's not even about, like, I object to this geopolitical thing that I actually have nothing to do with, but I want to say in our government. Like, you're allowed to do that. That's also an important thing. But now it's to the point where it's just like your kid brings home a book one day from the library and you're like, what the hell is this? This is disgust. Who gave you this book? And you go to the school to be like, your teacher gave my kid this book. Now you're the terrorist. Like, this isn't something that's like, I'll just stay out of politics. It's affecting your life. It's affecting your children. You have to stand up to this. You have to be aware of what's going on, or you are going to pay the price for your complicity and your silence. I totally agree, Don. It's horrifying seeing the way people justify this and actually are cheering this on, saying, yeah, good. Stuart Rhodes deserves it, and everybody else does as well. Sorry, I want to get to some other calls here, and I'm rambling, so it's my fault. I'm sorry, Don. Let's go to James in Australia. Also has a comment about the Stuart Rhodes sentence. Go ahead, James. You're on the air.
Oh, thanks. 18 years. What an absolute travesty. And look, what happens in the USA, which is a shining light of an open society and democracy, matters all around the world, including where I am down here in Australia. And now it sounds like this guy's been convicted of seditious conspiracy, which to me sounds a lot like treason. It's like medieval England, where the crime has never been defined. And what did he do? He walked around a building and used two words, civil war. If there's evidence against him that we don't know about, there isn't, but if there was, it should be made public. And by the way, Harrison, good on you for having Joe Biggs on a little few months ago before the sentencing there. But yeah, look, just an absolute travesty.
It is. It is an absolute travesty. And the egregiousness, the length of it, 18 years in prison. I mean, that's what you get if you murder someone. That's what you get if you murder multiple people in some countries. Some countries don't even let you sentence people to 18 years in prison. You could be a mass murderer. They'll still let you out in 15 in like Scandinavian countries. Like, everybody in the world recognizes this is an inhumane level of punishment for even the most egregious criminals. This is 18 years with no violence, no big terrorist plot that was uncovered. 18 years. It would be outrageous and egregious if it was just the 2 years he's already spent in prison. That's already too much punishment for this guy. But as you know, was pointed out by Cernovich and others. Even the Soviet Union only limited their punishment to the Gulag for like 5 to 10 years. You're still allowed to have a life afterwards. Not anymore. Not in America. We're beyond the most tyrannical governments this world has ever seen. We have surpassed them in tyranny. It's absolutely horrifying. We're going to go out to more of your phone calls in the next segment. Thank you so much for everybody calling in. Of course, we're going to be an outlet for Joe Biggs and for any of the Proud Boys and for any of the Oath Keepers. We are not cowards. We are not going to separate ourselves from these people just because we have a tyrannical government that's using their peaceful activism as an excuse to imprison them. If we don't stand up now, it's us next. Like, even if it's just our own protection and for our own sake, we have to try to defeat this. We have to try to make people aware of what's going on. They realize this isn't something you can just shrug off and act like it doesn't matter. Welcome back, folks. We will be joined shortly by Courtney Turner, the organizer of the Rebels for a Cause Fest. Very excited to talk to her. Talk to a few more of your phone calls here in just a second. Let's talk about war, shall we? Let's talk about world war. That is increasingly apparent. That's the plot of the New World Order. We'll start with this story. This was actually tweeted by Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who really is looking like a very viable not Trump option, as he seems to be on the ball when it comes to things like CBDCs, the climate change scam, importance of farming in a healthy and natural way. So he retweeted this talking about the Ukraine war. It's a story from commondreams.org. The war in Ukraine was provoked and why that matters to achieve peace. They say there were, in fact, two main U.S. provocations of this war. The first was the U.S. intention to expand NATO to Ukraine and Georgia in order to surround Russia in the Black Sea region by NATO countries. The second was the U.S. role in installing a Russophobic regime in Ukraine by the violent overthrow of Ukraine's pro-Russia president Yanukovych in February of 2014. The shooting war in Ukraine began with Yanukovych's overthrow 9 years ago, not in February 2022, as the U.S. government, NATO, and the G7 leaders would have us believe. And of course, there's a lot more than that as well, including the fact that they signed the Was it the Minsk agreement they signed, and then later, like they've admitted since then, they're like, oh, that was just to buy time to arm Ukraine, right? So they go into a peace treaty saying, okay, we're gonna back down, we're gonna, you know, actually deal with Russia diplomatically, knowing the whole time that all they're doing is giving themselves a little bit more time to prepare for war. Just what? And you expect Russia to have another peace treaty with you? When you are openly saying, oh, those fools, those idiots in Russia actually thought we wanted peace. We are just using that to buy time to get more weapons. You set up the stage for war. You set up the war to where it can't end because Russia has no incentive to sign a peace treaty with you because you're deceptive, warmongering scumbags. So this is your fault. It's entirely your fault. And they're doing it on purpose. And this might give you another little hint as to what that purpose is. We've played the video before where they talk about, we're going to rebuild Ukraine and it's going to be a government in your cell phone. Won't it be nice to be able to register your car with a click of a button on an app on your phone? Anyway, we have to kill 1 million people to achieve it. You're welcome, right? They are pretty much openly at this point, like wiping the slate clean with Ukraine to rebuild it as a technological hub. And of course, it's very convenient that Ukraine is like some of the most fertile and prosperous farmland in the world. It also has a very important position between Asia and Europe where pipelines go through and all this sort of stuff. I mean, it's the Americans that did this. We started it. We have a plan for it at the end. And this gives you some hint as to what that plan is. Palantir and Ministry of Digital Transformation of Ukraine strike reconstruction partnership. Palantir Technologies, which of course I'll remind you, show the video many times, their president Alex Karp brags about the fact that they use a program called Gotham to, quote, single-handedly stop the rise of the far right in Europe. In other words, using AI technology to manipulate the narrative and the discussions on the internet to silence one side of the political aisle without their knowing and certainly without their willing participation. And this is the so-called democracy that we're going to war with Ukraine to protect. It's not democracy at all. It's literally just a competition between who can psyop the most number of people. They are the ones in charge. It is rule by the media, rule by shadow, rule by technology. You don't know who's operating it or why, but you are subject to it, and it is deciding the fate of your world and your very life. Palantir Technologies Incorporated, the ones carrying this out, and the Ministry of Digital Transformation of Ukraine have announced today a partnership that will end that will help enable the company's technology to support the defense and reconstruction of the country in the wake of the Russian invasion. So Palantir is going to be basically helping to remake Ukraine after they helped to lead to the situation that destroyed it in the first place. And this just goes in line with Zelensky coming out and saying, we're very excited for Goldman Sachs and the Rothschilds and the big banks and the IMF to really pour in money for our reconstruction once this whole war gets over with. We're just going to turn the whole country over to the technocratic banking combines. Of course, Russia is responding to this seemingly appropriate ways. Russia signs deal to deploy tactical nuclear weapons in Belarus. Russia and Belarus signed a deal on Thursday formalizing the procedure for deploying Russian nuclear weapons on Belarusian territory. Control of the weapons will remain in Moscow. The move formalized the deal agreed on earlier by Russian President Vladimir Putin and Belarusian President Lukashenko. Putin previously announced in March that his country planned to deploy tactical, comparatively short-range and small-yield nuclear weapons in Belarus. The inking of the deal comes as Russia braces for Ukraine's much-anticipated counteroffensive. Both Russia and Belarusian officials framed the step as driven by hostility from the West. And for the last year, we've reported on this, that Russia constantly been warning they're going to go nuclear if pushed to it. They're not afraid to cross that line, and every step of the way they've said, please don't give them bombers, they give them bombers. Please don't give them tanks, they give them tanks. We really have to keep stepping things up because you keep accelerating things, you keep ramping up the combat, ramping up the conflict, and Russia's responding in kind. I mean, it is our own suicidal leaders that are pushing them towards this. Russia arrests Ukrainians planning to nuke power plants. Planning nuclear power plant strike, I should say. So they're planning to destroy nuclear power plants. Russia's arrested two Ukrainians allegedly planned to target nuclear power plants across the country. It was a sabotage group from the Ukraine Foreign Intelligence Service tried to blow up 30 power lines of nuclear power plants in Leningrad. Is it even called Leningrad anymore? What is this? It was called St. Petersburg. In early May, with the aim of stopping the nuclear reactors at the plants. This is somewhat believable because you have this story. Ukrainians were likely behind the Kremlin drone attack, U.S. officials say. They said the drone attack on the Kremlin earlier this month was likely orchestrated by one of Ukraine's special military or intelligence units, the latest in a series of covert actions against Russian targets that have unnerved the Biden administration. Oh, they're very unnerved. Yeah, they're just getting over, you know, the unnerving of them blowing up the undersea pipeline, and now to see that the Kremlin is being attacked, wow, they're so nervous about this. Russia says it intercepted two U.S. strategic bombers over the Baltic Sea. Russia said Thursday it had sent fighter jets to stop two U.S. strategic bomber planes from violating the state border over the Baltic Sea in the second such incidents just this week. Violation of the state border was prevented, the defense ministry said. Again, in this, we're not at war with Russia. It's undeclared at this point, and yet we are continually pushing the envelope in that regard. Meanwhile, South Korea, U.S. troops hold massive live fire drills near border with North Korea. U.S. rolls out policy proposals to tackle China's possible invasion of Taiwan. The CIA says it does not know if Israel plans to bomb Iran, which is strange because I do. Hey, I know. Hey, tell the CIA to give me a call. The answer is yes, and they won't stop talking about it. So how do you not know this? In veiled threat to Iran, Gallant says Air Force is preparing for their main goal. Yeah, they're going to bomb Iran, CIA, you idiots. Also, China has now blown up the U.S. Navy's largest warship in a simulation, just showing us what they're capable of. We're done with the doom and gloom today. We're through it. We're past it. We're going to not think about it anymore. I don't like talking about World War. I don't like talking about birthing children or my good friends being sent to jail for 18 years. I pray to God that one day we'll live in a country that doesn't require this type of attention paid to it, but we have to face reality. We can't hide our heads under the sand and ignore what's going on around us. And in order to defeat this monster, we've got to grab the bull by the horns. We've got to just face reality for what it is and take it down. And ignoring reality is not going to help us do that. And giving in to the black pill is also a recipe for disaster and failure on our part. So we don't talk about this stuff just to depress everybody and act like there's no hope. You got to be aware of the threats that are around us so we can confront them. That's the mission that we have here, and we hope that we fulfill it to your satisfaction. If so, please go to InfoWarsStore.com to support us. Fantastic products across the board and on massive discount almost continuously. You'll always find something on sale. Give it a try. You'll see you like it, and you'll be back for more. I promise you, because this stuff is extremely powerful, and when taken as directed, you'll notice the effects on your own life. 50% off BrainForce Plus. Survival Shield X3 is back in stock and 25% off. Turbo Force Plus also 25% off. Go to InfoWarsStore.com today to get your product and support this mission to save the world from the black pill. And with that, I'm very happy to shift gears here to a happier topic with my guest, Courtney Turner. She's the event coordinator for Rebels for a Cause, an event that's happening in Nashville on June 3rd and 4th, in which I will be speaking. Courtney Turner is a podcaster, motivational speaker, and the coordinator for the Cause Fest 2023, a live event filled with liberty-centered music, comedy, lectures, live podcast, aerial acrobatics, community building, and so much more. You can follow her on Twitter at Courtney Turner, and spelled a little differently, it's Courtney Turner is how it's spelled, but it's Courtney is how it's pronounced. And the website is rebelsforcause.com. That's rebelsforcause.com. Thank you so much for joining us today, Courtney.
Thank you so much for having me. It's so funny when you talk about how we need to like deal with reality. I always say ignorance is bliss until reality smacks you in the face, and reality always smacks you in the face. Unfortunately,
It's so true. Yeah, we could all be blissfully ignorant while they slowly build a prison around us, but we're not going to let that happen. We're moving past the black pill because the very fact that this event exists is a white pill for me, is a glimmer of sunlight through the cloud. So tell us about this event. Tell us about Rebels for a Cause, why you wanted to put it together. I'll be speaking there. I'm very excited, and people can use my name. If you go and you use Harrison as a promo code, you actually get a discount at rebelsforcause.com. Tell us about the event.
So for today only, before I do, because I'm horrible at selling, so I don't want to forget this, but for today only, if you use the code Harrison, you will get a 25% discount until midnight tonight. So
that's huge.
Definitely don't delay. Don't miss out on that. So,
yeah, please. And I'd love to see a ton of Info Warriors there. If you're able to make it to Nashville next weekend, I really look forward to hanging out with everybody. So tell us about this event. What's it going to be?
Okay, so it is Rebels for Cause, and Cause stands for Creative Artists Uniting for the Sovereignty of Everyone. And so as you were talking about with the whole black pill thing, so what really one of the reasons I decided to do this is because I've been going to a lot of these information conferences in the freedom patriot movement, the health freedom sphere, the truth or sphere, whatever you want to label it. And they're all wonderful. And, you know, the common thread is people tend to be so happy to be able to connect with like minds, like-minded souls, especially after having been atomized for, you know, especially the past few years. So that's been wonderful. But one of the things that I've noticed is that while information can be power, and I'm a huge proponent of sharing all of this knowledge, you know, because it is an info war. I think that people do leave a little bit blackpilled because it's like, okay, now I have all this information. What do I do with it? And I've noticed that the other thing I've noticed in my research is that a lot of the art that we see has been infiltrated and co-opted for the purposes of socially engineering the masses, for culture creation. And a lot of the organic, liberty-minded artists are not given a platform. Yeah. And art is just one of the quintessential things about being human. So this won't be a surprise to this audience, but I typically talk about how I think that the elite's goal is to put us into a transhuman leading to a post-human world that is controlled by an AI cyborg mind that they program, and then we're all siloed in a metaverse. And I believe one of the best ways to combat that is to be radically human. And one of the things that makes human beings humans is that we are social beings, and we need to find our tribe, our people that we can connect with and build and forge those relationships. So the other thing about humans is that we're creative beings. And one of the ways that that's manifested is through art. So there's a very long-winded way of saying that I wanted something that was a hybrid of the great information. You know, in my podcast, I say we inform, inspire, and empower people. But I also think there needs to be some fun. And art is one way that we can, you know, bond together and have some fun. So the parent company is actually called the Freedom Unity Network. So it was really important to me that have fun.
I totally agree. And you're exactly right. This is about, I mean, this is like the sci-fi battle between humans and the machine. I mean, the machine is this heartless, soulless monster that we're trying to fight against. And the only way to defeat this thing is to empower your humanity, expand your consciousness, and embrace reality for all of its good while, you know, fighting back against the evil that we know is out there. I'm very excited for this. And, you know, I think art, almost all art is like a story. It tells a story, even just a painting or a song or a dance. Like, there's a story there, and humans connect to stories. And I think that's what I'm excited about is, because everybody talks about the narrative. What is the narrative? It's this story that we're being sold, that humans are evil, that, you know, once upon a time there were these evil, oppressive humans, and then the World Economic Forum came to save the Earth from the big, bad humans. I mean, that's the story they're telling. We need an alternative narrative. We need not just, you know, disabusing people of their narrative, but actually our own narrative that says, no, here's how we save humanity from these technocratic psychopaths. So, you know, I see all of art as telling a story, and we need to tell our story to defeat their story. I mean, that's really what this is, isn't it?
It is. And it's the human stories, the human experience. And there's so much nuance in humanity. And they don't want us to think that. You know, this is why they create dialectical narratives, and they put people into these circles. You know, when you study that's actually their term, like, you know, the sorcerer's circle, the wizard's circle.
Right.
And I think one of the things about artists is that because they're able to color outside the lines, they're able to step outside of those boxes and present something that may not be, you know, inside either of the circles that they're presenting for us. And that doesn't mean you have to agree with any of it, but I think that it gives an opportunity for people to be creative, to actually use some critical thinking, and to connect with humans as humans, rather than what they're doing with their narratives is they dehumanize people. Yeah. And think that getting together around art is a way to really celebrate humanity and celebrate people who want to take ownership of free will, celebrate personal agency, personal sovereignty. And I think that if we can't rally behind personal sovereignty and art, then we really have no hope as humanity. So those are two things we should be able to get behind.
No, you're exactly right. And I feel like there's a disturbingly large number of people on our side, kind of technically, that have unknowingly sort of embraced the black-pilled idea, and they just like – they're always alone. They're like online all the time, like looking at all these stories. They don't realize that they're like they're sinking into the swamp. They're like sinking into the mud. And it's only when you go out and you're just with a bunch of people having fun, listening to music or going to a ball game, that you're like, oh, right, this is what it's all about. This is the human spirit and the celebration that we're actually fighting for. You can't just focus on what you're fighting against. You have to have something you're fighting for. And we're fighting for humanity itself, and I think it's such a powerful thing. We'll get into more of it on the other side with Courtney Turner. Again, you can find her on Twitter at Courtney Turner, and the website is rebelsforcause.com. Use promo code Harrison. Today you get 25% off a ticket. That is a huge discount, and I'd be honored to see you there. So use the promo code Harrison at rebelsforcause.com. We'll be right back with Courtney Turner. Next weekend in Nashville, Tennessee, there will be a great gathering of patriots. I will be there. It's very exciting. It's called Rebels for a Cause. The website is rebelsforcause.com. Go there, order your ticket, use promo code Harrison. That's me. That's my name. Promo code Harrison to get 25% off today. You got to order by midnight tonight, and I hope to see you there. Just go to rebelsforcause.com and start scrolling. You see just a huge number of people that are going to be there. Everybody, Jay Dyer to just Matt Baker and Alex Stringer and Dr. Sela Emanuel and Dr. Ben Marble and George Webb. I mean, it's going to be a real gathering of fun people. that I'm excited just for the fellowship alone, let alone the events and the presentations and the artistry. It's all going to be so much fun. It's going to be in Nashville next weekend. I hope to see you there June 3rd and 4th. With me is Courtney Turner. You can follow her on Twitter at Courtney Turner. It's spelled Courtenay. It's C-O-U-R-T-E-N-A-Y Turner on Twitter, and you can follow her there. She's the event coordinator that's putting all this together, and she'll be doing an aerial acrobatic show there. So just, again, it's not about, this isn't a political rally as much as it is a cultural celebration. That's what I'm excited about. And I was just thinking about this, Courtney, because we were talking about the black pill, and I always think back to, of all things, the Hippocratic Oath. There's this line from the Hippocratic Oath that says, "I will apply for the benefit of the sick all measures that are required, avoiding those twin traps of overtreatment and therapeutic nihilism." I think that's the phrase that sums up the black pill. It can feel good to give in to the downer, right? It can feel good to just go, "We don't have any hope, and I'm so smart because I understand that it's all hopeless." But we want to avoid that therapeutic nihilism. And we also want to avoid, you know, going over the top and just being crazy and thinking we have to fight our way out of this when all we have to do is show people a better path forward. Can you comment on that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, people talk a lot about the spiritual warfare. And I think what happens is that people get very trapped, again, in the binary thinking. And they're either in the one camp or the other. And if it's really spiritual warfare, there needs to be both light and dark, right? Mm-hmm. It's not all dark. I think some people get very caught up, like as you were saying before, in very black-pilled, and they get all mired in that. And then there's other people who kind of live in their ignorance is bliss state and more of a utopia type of framework. And neither is really accurate, right? We live in a very nuanced world, and if it is a battleground, then both are at play. And you know, this is just to show that there can be a light side of culture. You know, I think that right now, because so much of the culture is infiltrated and co-opted and dictated by the mainstream, we don't really have any other examples. There aren't a lot of the people, as I was saying before, a lot of the people who are more liberty-minded, who have rejected some of the mainstream narratives, do not have the opportunity and they don't get platforms. So this is just to show there can be, you know, good, clean, wholesome fun that's rooted in family values, that's rooted in some deep core values, and that we can still get together and celebrate and have a good time.
Yeah, and it's about just being human beings. And, you know, another thing is that the right wing, we're our own worst enemy a lot of the time. There's so much drama. There's always, like, backbiting and people accusing people of other. And it's just like, I'm so sick of it. I never participated in it. And this seems like a good chance to just leave all the drama at the door, leave it at home, come to Nashville, and just be ready to enjoy fellowship together. And honestly, I'm just so excited for that. And again, just meeting people and being out there. I mean, that's the reason they censor us off the internet. They don't want our information out, but they also don't want us knowing each other and participating in things together. So this really counteracts all that.
Yeah, that I've seen that too. You know, I'm part of so many of these freedom groups and they're all wonderful. None of them know of each other, right? In the same area, the same location. I do think that that's kind of by design. And I also think, you know, when you talk about the right kind of being their own worst enemy, I think the left typically are really good. This is where the term fascism comes from, right? They're a band of sticks that unite together. And they may disagree on 99.9% of things, but they'll find that 0.01% and they'll band together and unite and rally behind that. And I think on the right, because they do value individualism so much, that they find the 99.9% of things that they disagree on and they won't unite over anything. And I think, you know, there's a very wide tent here. It, certainly not everybody who is going to be at the Cause Fest agrees on everything. But, you know, I think the two things we really agree on are, you know, that art should be fun and that we should celebrate art and that we should celebrate free will and personal sovereignty. We can't get behind that. I don't know. I mean, I think those are two things we should really unite over. So.
Right. Do we not have more in common than we have to disagree over? I mean, I think it's obvious. You just don't see it, you know, embodied as much. And when you talk about the fact that we need art, we need culture that reflects our values, it's like right now there's this dichotomy between like Hollywood that's just trash. It's just all of their morals are terrible. They can't write a good story to save their lives. I think they literally don't understand like heroism or honor. Like they don't even get why certain stories draw people in and other ones drive them away. So they're terrible and they're shoving it down your throat. And then the other side, there's art being made, but it's like explicit. It's like very like activist
art. It's pedantic.
Art.
And yeah, it's so pedantic. It's not fun and creative, right? I don't want to go watch a movie or hear music or, you know, participate in any art form where they're shoving a message down my throat.
Even if it's a message you agree with. You get exactly what I'm saying.
That message. Yeah, it's like, okay, well, I'll go see a lecture or I'll read a book or I'll turn on the radio if I want to just be imbued in that sort of messaging. You know, yes, there's a time and place for that. But art should, the thing about art is part of the reason it's so powerful, and I think this is part of the reason they do co-opt it, is because they know that it elicits a visceral reaction in humans. It has the power to effectuate change on a cellular level. This is why, you know, they talk about how they changed the radio frequency from 432 to 444. One was healing. One, you know, has a negative frequency for humanity. And they know this. They know that it effectuates change on a cellular level. And so I think that we need to recognize that, honor that, and celebrate art in an organic way and really the beauty of it, because I think that's one of the things they do, that they're, I always say they have a trinity that they worship, and it's the triple D's. It's the first one is distortion, deception, delusion, right? So that's the first D, and that's kind of how they manipulate people through that. And then it's division, divide and conquer. We all know how well they use that tactic. And then the third one is destruction, you know, which I think encompassed in that would be the death and de-elevation, degeneration. And this is all a breeding ground for usurpation of power. But in the destruction, that's where they de-elevate things. And one of the things about beauty and art is that it elevates, it's aspirational. When you're talking about heroism, right, that's aspirational. And they don't want that because they can't create. And so they want to destroy. And I think we need to, you know, show that there is beauty. And I don't mean it in terms of the, contrived metrics that they've created or contrived examples. I mean it in terms of, you know, like nature. A sunset is so incredibly beautiful, and it, you know, moves us viscerally. We, none of us can deny it. We can't necessarily explain it, but we know it when we see it. And that's art.
100%. And I love, you know, there's a type of post that people do where they go, this is my ideology, this is my political ideology. And it's just like a nice cottage surrounded by flowers, or it's just like a family going to church or something. And that's kind of what we need. We just need the aspirational imagery and embodiment of like what we want the world to be, not this death factory, not the abortion and just sex. And it's just like, how about something wholesome and good and uplifting? How about that for once? I love those three D's you just laid down, because their inverse tells us what we need to do. If they use deception, we need to use the truth. If they use division, we need to come together. And if they use destruction, we need to create and build. That really gives the whole blueprint for the way out of this mess.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. Yeah.
Oh, I'm so excited for it. Again, it's Rebels for a Cause. The website is rebelsforcause.com. It'll be happening in Nashville June 3rd and 4th. Courtney Turner is the organizer, the event coordinator. She's my guest, of course. Her Twitter is at Courtney Turner. And just thank you for putting this on. And tell me, why Nashville? Why did we choose Nashville? I love Nashville,
but I live in I live just outside of Nashville, about 20 minutes south. So the event itself is actually in Franklin, Tennessee. And I really believe it's a huge battleground right now. So, you know, some people know the story, how we had the venue we have is Liberty Hall at the Franklin Factory, which is absolutely beautiful. The name says it all. It really embraces. So we're embracing it. But it's a very expensive venue. It is, you know, very involved, lots of things to put together. And so we had looked into getting the Harlingen Scale Park, which was right across the street, which would have been much cheaper and more affordable. And it was pending for a while. We really didn't know. And just to clarify, it wasn't a formal, you know, we didn't put in a written request or anything. It's not like they turned us down.
I know, but
they were kind of stringing us along.
Then it got taken by a Pride Festival. I wish we could talk for longer. That's our show, folks. It's Courtney Turner, rebelsforcause.com. Use promo code Harrison by midnight tonight. Get 25% off.